Welcome to What's the Difference, where we ask the tough questions about the practice of diversity and inclusion in our organizations. Why do we seem to keep spinning our wheels without seeing the progress we would like? Why are we so polarized about diversity? And what opportunities exist to have your company take advantage of what a truly diverse and inclusive company can do? Here is your host, Sarah Taylor.
When you have a great episode and folks respond and love hearing the topic, you know you need to dig in more. And that's what we had in episode 91 with Dr. Corey Seemiller and Dr. Megan Grace, Generation Z in the workplace. We know that there's so much to talk about with Generation Z, and we have heard that from our listeners as well. And so this is the gift of part two of that topic. And specifically, in this episode, we're going to really dig deep into specifically diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, and how Generation Z, their expectations of DEI in the workplace, how they may see DEI in the workplace, and particularly what we as practitioners can be thinking about related to Generation Z. So we are once again welcoming back Dr. Corey Seemiller and Dr. Megan Grace and their incredible expertise, both of them that have years of experience in generational research and study and books and all kinds of work to very confidently claim their expertise in this space. Corey and Megan, it is so great to have you back with us.
Thanks so much for having us back.
We're excited to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yes. So, Corey, why don't we start with you? I want to hear your sense of, you know, we talked last time, and actually first, let me just maybe do a little recap for our listeners, some of the things that we did talk about. And so a little nudge too, if you didn't hear episode 91, we talked about the research that Corey and Megan have done, and particularly around Generation Z in the workplace, and how that's grown over time. And we talked particularly about misperceptions of Generation Z in the workplace, important things to be aware of for that particular generation as they're entering the workforce, patterns within cultural groups, within their experiences and perspectives, and patterns in how they see hierarchy, individuality, and so forth. So, Corey, picking up on that, as we look at Generation Z in particular and diversity, equity, and inclusion, let's start with the first, which is obviously a no-brainer. We know that Generation Z is more diverse. So can you speak just to that in particular, just as a cohort versus regardless of their perceptions, just talk about their diversity in and of itself and how that also then may be a reason why they experience DEI differently in the workplace.
Sure. As we think about the diversity of Generation Z, of course, you know, the first thing most people think of is racial diversity, and they are the most racially diverse generation that we've had in U.S. history. They're right around 49% consider themselves non-white or not exclusively white. That number is pretty much expected to grow a little bit more with the subsequent generation of Gen Alpha, which is still being born, so we're not quite sure exactly how that's going to pan out. But of course, with racial diversity, we are seeing more diversity, but I think there's some other pieces of diversity that are really important to talk about as well. We see growth in numbers of multiracial individuals in this age group. Again, tracking back to even the legalization of interracial marriage, and you can see birth patterns. We have a greater number of young people that have same-sex parents, same-sex couples as parents. We have a lot of kids who have grown up and now are immigrants, adopted immigrant children, because if you look back in the early 2000s when international adoption was really much at its peak, you see that now those babies are now grown up and, you know, going into, you know, the workforce. And so we see a lot of other kinds of what we would consider categorical diversity among this group. We also, though, see a number of, you know, pieces of diversity that have to do with self-identity, right? Not necessarily these sort of categories. And one of the things that's important about that is, you know, looking at how this generation tends to identify as fluid and not, and across a number of different identity groups. So, of course, we see fluidity with gender identity. We see fluidity with sexual orientation, but we also see things like fluidity with religion. And spirituality is this idea of not really being in a box, but sort of either, you know, kind of going back and forth between things, identifying as something new and unique, being able to change your identity or ascribe to more than one identity simultaneously. So really creating a complexity of identity. So while we're seeing some of these categorical diversity numbers go up, we're also seeing perceptions of how they see themselves as diverse also increasing in this group. So one of the things to know is, you know, as we talk about diversity, this generation often just says, you know, it's diversity is not something we program for or hire for, or, you know, coordinate or, you know, any of these fancy titles that we have of these diversity people in places, but diversity is just who we are, and acknowledging the fact that that diversity that they bring is a strength to everyone that they interact with.
That's interesting how you even said how they may even define diversity differently. Say a little bit more, Corey, about what you mean by they might say diversity is just who you are. Is that just in the sense of everyone is diverse? Is that what you're referring to? Well, or that it's just a given?
Well, it's not so much that everyone is diverse, it's that everyone is unique.
And yes, right. That, yeah, I guess that's what I was trying to say. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's unique. And that if we were kind of collectively intelligent about it, we would leverage everyone's potential, everyone's identities, everyone's experiences, everyone's perceptions in ways that can help us solve the world's problems, rather than turning around and fighting about the fact that we're different and we don't see things, you know, eye to eye. But diversity is who we are, and we bring that to the table. And instead of trying to make meaning of it and trying to put us in boxes, is, you know, from their perspective, it's why don't we leverage this potential so that we can actually do something with the diverse and unique perspectives and experiences that we have.
Yeah, well, I can say that I definitely agree. And if only more folks were culturally competent enough to do that, to actually make that possible. I definitely agree. So Megan, as they come into then the workplace with that definition essentially of diversity and even just being more diverse themselves, how does that shift how they approach diversity in the workplace? And actually, I wonder if you can even before that, go back to, because we know generations, how they see today is very much based on how they were brought up. And so how does how Gen Z was raised, their experiences when they were raised, in particularly in relationship to diversity, equity, and inclusion, how does that specifically influence their expectation as they enter into our workplace now?
So thinking about Gen Z as they've grown up, I think something that has been, I don't want to say unique, but certainly present for this generation is that, as Corey mentioned, that diversity is kind of who you are, and what you bring into the world and what is unique about you is accepted and is valued. I think that that is something that is furthering the conversation around diversity, furthering the conversation into like the sphere of inclusion and belongingness and welcomingness. And so it's not just a matter of being like, I recognize that there are diverse people, but going that next step of saying you are diverse in whatever that identity might be, but I will do something to be sure to be inclusive of that so that your identity that might be different than other people's still feels welcome and included in this environment. And we've seen that as they've grown up in schools. Like I think of something that while might not be racial diversity or sexual orientation, but diversity of dietary things is that we've seen a lot of like allergies. It's just like it, and it seems simple, mm-hmm. but it being able to include kids of all different dietary restrictions, allergies, preferences, whether that is choice of being a vegan or having a severe nut allergy, we've seen schools adapt and be able to include all of those students within lunch, within parties, within celebrations where there's food. And that's just like such a small example of how they have seen the world. And I use that one because I think everyone knows someone with a food allergy or maybe a different preference in dining, whatever that might be. And so that is something that they've grown up with, is that someone being different does not mean we outcast them or like that we just like brush it aside, but that we do try to work to include them and help them feel like they belong. And I think that that's where we're going to see them move into the workspace and say, sure, that's great. Like you can say that you have diverse identities represented, but like, what are you doing to make those diverse identities feel like they belong here, that they're valued here, that they're safe here? I think a big piece of it is psychological safety, that do people who might not have the majority identity feel like they are psychologically safe within a workplace, and that they are going to be supported. And that if there's anything that might come up, that their diverse identity is not going to be held against them in whatever manner that might be. And so that's where I think we're going to see Gen Z really start to evolve this conversation around inclusion, and not just we've checked a box, we have a diverse work, like a working team. No, like making sure that every aspect and nuance that people are willing to share are respected and they're included and they're welcomed, whether that is through, again, emotional support, relationships, the policies that exist within a workplace. There's so many different elements that we could go into how Generation Z is going to walk into the workplace and say, well, you can say you're diverse, but are you truly accepting and inclusive? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's where we're going to see a big evolution. And we're going to have a lot of young people coming into roles and challenging organizations that probably haven't changed in quite some time, but also demanding accountability. And we've already, and we kind of talked about this a little bit in our last conversation, but I think we've already seen that with the way that Generation Z, even from a consumer perspective, is looking at companies they support. I think that's going to continue into the way that they look at jobs and companies they want to work for.
Yeah. So one of those pieces that you were talking about as that kind of expectation is because they have seen it. Folks have adapted to them. So that lunchroom or the parties in your example, there was that adaptation for food allergies in that example. And so it just seems like the norm. And so then if it's the norm, then we expect it in the workplace too. The other piece that you touched on just a bit, and Corey, I want to go back to you with this particular question, is that piece of how they then vocalize, and even just more about really what an expectation is. Regardless of whether it is a DEI issue or whatever an issue might be, Gen Z is going to be approaching their leaders very differently. And we talked about that in the last session. Hierarchy is a little bit different to them. They are going to have a very different approach with their leaders. Can you go down that path a bit then, and what that might look like in an organization of how Generation Z staff in a workplace are going to approach their leaders about these DEI issues, and what will their expectations be of those leaders?
Well, you know, as we think about, again, that kind of that hierarchy piece and the fact that, you know, Gen Z they do push the boundaries, but they're also respectful of understanding that the way to make systemic change isn't always just who can sort of yell the loudest or file the most complaints. They're pretty intellectually savvy generation when it comes to creating change and will sometimes take the back door to do that. They work, you know, a lot of times around the systems that are already in place. So instead of saying, oh, there's an issue with this certain thing, I'm going to, you know, put this in my end of the year review, or I'm going to bring it up to my supervisor during our one-on-one, and I'm going to put something in the little suggestion box. You know, they're already thinking about systemically, how can you change something? And typically, you know, what we see and what we've seen outside of organizations, but even just sort of in the community spaces or even in educational institutions, is we see this collective mobility where a lot of them are, you know, not approaching these things in an isolated way. It's not one employee is upset about one thing and they go and they talk to the boss about this one thing. It's usually ends up being that that person potentially talks to their peers and they find out that they're noticing something that's very similar, whether it's a policy or a procedure or a hiring practice or something that just doesn't fit and it's not in alignment. And so the goal is in many ways for them to come together to find a way to make that systemic change. And so that may mean talking to somebody, maybe it's HR department or something, whatever is most realistic. But a lot of times it means just kind of brainstorming other ways of doing things or finding other ways to kind of challenge what's being done, but doing that in a collective manner. So they're very kind of savvy about this kind of social change. And again, not in an isolated or a confrontational way. If you look at a lot of the advocacy efforts of this generation, you know, they do things that you wouldn't necessarily imagine. Like they don't protest outside of a restaurant, but they might, you know, organize a viral boycott. I think what we are seeing and we're going to see is this kind of collective and viral mobility of employees that may be feeling similar things from a system that they feel is not benefiting everyone. And then we'll find ways to suggest or advocate for systemic change.
So I know that your expertise is Generation Z. And we even talked before we started the recording here about how, you know, it's just impossible to know and be an expert on all of the complexities of all of the generations. But here I'm going to go and certainly tell me if this is off the table. But I wonder if you have a sense of the difference in that particular regard, what you were just talking about, Corey, of that not being as confrontational, working within the systems, that sort of a thing. And I wonder if you can speak to, is that a significant difference from the millennial generation? In my experience, the millennial generation is more confrontational, if you will, in the workplace with whatever it might be, and particularly with DEI issues, that they say, you know, this isn't right, it needs to change. That they are more likely to kind of have that protest, if you will, within the organization. Is there a difference? And I certainly, again, understand if you want to stick to the expertise of Generation Z, but if you have some insight there, I'd love to hear that.
Sure. You know, again, sort of going back to this idea that, you know, Generation Z, as I was mentioning, actually works around the system. So I think that's a real big differentiator. Is they work around the system. So like if a feedback system in an organization is to put something in a suggestion box, they're not necessarily using the suggestion box. They are working around the system. They're finding other ways to give feedback. They're trying to get on committees that might make change. They're really trying to find ways to make sustainable social change within the organization. You know, again, more anecdotally with millennials, a lot have, you know, have the empowerment and the excitement and engagement to actually talk to people and say, this isn't working. You know, we know one thing we do know about millennials is, you know, they prefer flatter organizations than potentially Gen Z does, and seeing that sort of this more egalitarian approach. So there may be something in that being that millennials may be more likely to approach people in higher positions, positional authority, because of their view of the egalitarian nature of the organization, whereas Gen Z sort of seems to kind of, you know, see that exists and then goes around sort of behind it to do those changes. So that's really kind of where I see, I mean, there's a lot of nuance between the two, and, you know, that's sort of a broad brush idea, but But I do think I could probably say that, you know, millennials are more working within the system to challenge it, whereas Gen Z is more trying to work around the system and make that really systemic change so that they don't have to keep working around a system that doesn't work.
So let's say I'm the CEO of an organization then. Does that mean that I am going to be, and I know this is a very broad generalization, am I going to be more likely to hear from my millennial staff that are, that have ideas or that don't like the way things are going? Because that's kind of a part of the system, if you will, versus Gen Z.
I mean, at an individual level, probably, I would imagine, but that's also, we have to take into account the context where, you know, if we're looking right today, I mean, millennials are older, they're in more senior level positions and probably have the ability
yes.
to do that.
Yes.
If we were given an equal power dynamic, you probably see an individual millennial more likely to go in and say something to another person about something that they a suggestion or an idea or an issue that they may have, whereas Gen Z a little bit more collectively mobile. And again, we're looking at them in a context of time and space, right? So Gen Z,
yeah, that's right.
They're your youngest employees, so they don't have that kind of agency either. So part of their mm-hmm. mobility collectively is something that empowers them because they don't have much power if you're at the very lowest ranks in your organization. So that's part of what Megan and I really focus on is, you know, not just understanding this kind of personality of a generation, but sort of thinking about where it is situated in the context of others. So it is a little different, but I would say when millennials were in that space, when they were new employees, they might've been more likely to go in and just say to their supervisor or their boss's boss, like, hey, I have an idea. Hey, listen to me. Or, hey, I want to fix this. Or, you know, I want to change this. Or I want to be on this task force. Whereas that might not be such the case with Gen Z. Again, we don't really know specifically that because that's not like a research study we've done about Gen Z doing that in particular. But from the previous research we've done, they're more likely to kind of work collectively, virally, and behind the scenes to make the changes than they are necessarily to go into those office and say something.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And thank you. That's a good reminder for me, too. And of course, it is the context and the time and space that they're in. Of course, that's so important to think about.
Hello, my name is Kimone, and I am Deep Sea's Director of Operations. I wanted to take a moment to mention a resource you will find impactful for both personal and organizational growth. In many of the What's the Difference episodes, you've heard Sarah use the terms frames and filters and reference the 5 stages of development. We are making available for download a chapter from Sarah's book called Filter Shift, How Effective People See the World. This chapter is titled It's Developmental and will deepen your understanding how we as individuals and organizations can develop from stages of lesser effectiveness to greater effectiveness as we interact across the differences we encounter. These are powerful and foundational concepts for seeing ourselves, seeing others, seeing better, and seeing more effective approaches for navigating the differences that make a difference in this era of high-speed change and complexity at work, in our community, and the world. Go to the resources link at the top of the podcast homepage or visit www.deepseaconsulting.com where you can download it for free.
So before we get to kind of the just really 2 more questions here. So this first for you, Megan, about the cultural competence of this generation, we and particularly a misunderstanding that likely is going to happen. We know that this generation is not more culturally competent as measured by the IDI, nor is any generation more culturally competent or any identity group. Women aren't more culturally competent than men. People of color aren't more culturally competent than white folks. And again, this using the Intercultural Development Inventory, the IDI, as an assessment and cultural competence in the sense of our effectiveness as we hold our unconscious in check and we interact across difference. Because that is a skill that takes intentional work to develop, it isn't just something about, okay, because I'm different, I know how to, I'm not a part of, say, the dominant culture, then I know how to interact across differences. So all of that framing, I know over and over again, I will hear from older generations. Folks will say, well, you know, millennials and Gen Z, you know, they get this. And an assumption that they are more culturally competent. And I have a feeling I've heard that even from younger generation folks as well, you know, an assumption that because we've been exposed to more differences, because we're more comfortable with more with differences, we are therefore more capable, which again, we know is not the case. But they're likely coming in, like everyone, thinking they're more culturally competent. Folks, older generations are thinking they're more culturally competent. What do you know about what that mix then creates as they start coming together? That mix of, you know, a misunderstanding of their actual ability when it comes to interacting and checking their unconscious.
So that's actually a little counter to what we found in some of the research that we've done, is that Gen Z actually does rate themselves relatively high in their ability to understand the perspectives of others. I mean, it's apples and oranges when you think about from like a research perspective of the sources of data. But I think the thing that we have to keep in mind is that while the IDI might not be saying that Generation Z is more culturally competent than any other generation, I think that there's a willingness to learn and the desire to want to learn and acknowledge missteps and mistakes when it comes to not being an inclusive, like being inclusive. I think that there's a just a willingness to understand and take the perspectives of others with this generation at a younger age. I think that we often hear from older generations, well, back in my day, fill in the blank wasn't a thing we talked about. Okay, well, we're talking about it now. Like that just, we can't rewind and make you talk about it at that age. So it's one of those things where I think Generation Z will be okay with leaning into being called out and being called in when they do have to do developmental work around DE&I, being and recognizing why it matters. It's not because it's a compliance thing, but that it's a, okay, I might be a part of the majority identity in this environment, but I have a friend that is near and dear to my heart. So being able to be supportive and be inclusive to that person has real world impacts to the people I care about. And we do know from our research that making a difference for other people and being there for the people that matter to them is incredibly important and a huge source of their motivation. Mm-hmm. So I think that we'll find that they're motivated by relationships and will be okay with doing developmental work around DE&I, even if they might not be as culturally competent as or more than other generations, because I think that there is a willingness to learn, and I think that that has to be noted. They, again, it's not just purely the exposure of being around other people that are diverse that make you inclusive of diverse people. We see that all the time.
Yes,
but it's also the recognition of, like, we can't put a blanket statement on Generation Z either, because there are some out here that are challenging the way that we're thinking about inclusion. To a degree that I'd never even considered. So I have my own podcast and I interviewed an environmental activist, and 19 years old when I interviewed him, and he actually taught me quite a bit about, like, environmentalism is often very whitewashed, and environmentalism is often led by affluent white people, but the people that are most likely to be affected by it are people of color and people low income populations. And so really talking about the climate inclusion and climate justice and this idea of intersectional environmentalists and things I'd never considered. And so it's this idea that they're going to be some of those individuals in Generation Z that are going to be teaching us and innovating in the DE&I space. And then we're going to see that some some young people aren't going to fit that trend. We see it all the time. If you're at all close with the college campus settings, we still see these times in which there are hate crimes, there are acts of intolerance, there are just horrific things from a DE&I perspective that take place. And it's not to say, well, that's the whole summary of Generation Z. Like, yes, we have to recognize individuals make up a collective, but oftentimes there are individuals that are completely different than the collective. And so they might be counter to the predominant culture within Generation Z, which is a relatively inclusive generation that wants to be celebrating diversity. But we're still going to find that there are young people that don't value that as much as their peers do. And that is also an okay reality. Like, absolutely, that is something we have to accept, but that's also puts into perspective of there's still always going to be an opportunity to continue to learn, to evolve our culture around DE&I within organizations, and it being more than just a compliance check in onboarding. So that's where I think while we might not see that there are significant differences in measured competence, I think the willingness to learn is, and it's not to say that other generations are not willing to learn, but there is an element of elasticity of being a young person and learning about this stuff earlier in your life that makes it a lot easier to understand and to recognize it for the rest of your life.
That's so true. Yeah, that's so true. I appreciate the comment, which is good for anyone as a reminder about talking about any difference, that there's no group that's a monolith. And that reminder of their perpetrators of hate crimes in that generation as well. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I would say, Megan, that likely the research that you're referring to isn't contradictory, because we know that, again, across any identity group, pretty much everyone overestimates their competence. And so I think that that makes a lot of sense, that Generation Z would, in a self perception, say, yep, I don't remember the term exactly, the clarifier that you use, but essentially their self-perception is that they're more effective. And that makes all kinds of sense. When we're talking about the difference between, you know, how I perceive I am versus my actual level of competence. So all of that to say, I bet the research doesn't contradict. That's good to point out too. We ended the last conversation with, just in general, what do HR or DEI practitioners in general need to know about bringing Gen Z into the workplace? But I want to be more specific of, let's say you've got the chief diversity officer, the chief inclusion officer, chief equity officer, or the diversity council, and they're seeing that Gen Z isn't as engaged as they would like them to be in the actual DEI work in the organization. What would you say? What are some things that a DEI practitioner can do to engage Generation Z in very, very specifically in DEI work? Cora, do you want to take this as the last question?
Sure. You know, one of the interesting things that, you know, you look at just DEI work in general, and I know it certainly happens in higher education, and I would imagine it happens other places, is that it oftentimes falls on people who are in targeted populations and targeted identities. So you are the sole African-American woman working in the organization. Therefore, you are the voice of that. You're expected to be the voice. You're expected to be on committees. You're expected to be that representative to push forward, you know, the ideals and notions that would represent an entire community of people that maybe not are even employed in the organization because of policies and you know, non-inclusive practices. So, you know, we're looking at a very diverse Generation Z. And so this idea is, you know, being mindful of talking about, you know, allyship, and this idea that, you know, we're not just going to young Gen Zers who are likely to be, you know, statistically, at least we know they're likely to be more racially diverse or more diverse in a number of kind of identity-based, demographics, and coming to them and saying, you know, all right, get involved in DEI work, and you can represent this group, and, you know, tell us what they need.
Yeah.
You know, be really careful of that, because it's going to be really tempting to do that when you have a very, you know, a more diverse group of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we just have to be super careful about that. So, you know, what are ways that we can think about the DEI stuff? Let me give you an example. So after the, you know, a lot of the Black Lives Matter protests and things that happened in summer 2020 after George Floyd's death, a lot of colleges and universities stepped up and said, hey, we're going to do something about it. We're going to look at our policies. We're going to look at our hiring practices. We're going to look at inclusive behaviors. And it came out with these beautiful statements. And come to find out later on, when Gen Zers were asked to what extent did your institution even do anything about it, a vast majority of them said they didn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
And, but it kind of followed up with, and that's not surprising. So, yeah. So the other part of this is, if you're going to ask Gen Z to be involved, you have to be open to and willing to actually do the work. Can't put together a task force and have all these ideas about changing up policies or procedures or putting in new programs or positions or, you know, equity across salaries or whatever you're going to do, and get Gen Z excited about that process, and then turn around and actually not follow through. And this is it's hard, because when you're asked over and over again, and then things don't happen, you start to take matters in your own hands. And this is what we're seeing with this generation with a number of things. There are so many social issues that they have such passion about that they just don't necessarily feel that people who are in positions of power are actually serious about doing anything about it, that they feel that they have to own it. And, you know, as piggybacking on what Megan said, things around the environment, they, you know, let's say, you know, kind of the adults around the table have let us down. Like, you aren't going to save the earth. We are. So, you know, get out of the way. And I think that's going to be the thing about DEI and organizations is, you know, these sort of powers that be, whether it's a diversity council or HR or whoever, you know, if they're going to just do kind of lip service to this stuff, Gen Z is going to see right through that. And they're going to do their own thing to create, you know, inclusion or challenge that. But so if you're really honest and you're really transparent and you're really committed to making these changes, that's when you pull in Gen Z. But you certainly, you know, don't want to do it as lip service, because they're going to see right through it.
See right through that. Yes. That's fabulous.
And I've actually got two things to kind of add to that. To Corey's point about oftentimes, especially our large corporations are going to have, whether they're affinity groups or they are DE&I working groups, bringing in people of the majority identities is just as important as those who are of marginalized identities and minority identities. Because oftentimes, as Corey pointed out, it is the people of diverse identities that are burdened with doing a lot of the work and that the advocacy for themselves, but they are not the ones that are upholding systems of power. And so I think that that's an important thing that we have to know, is that to really break down where we find that there are exclusive practices or discriminatory practices within organizations, is that we have to take a good hard look at how those practices are upheld. So even within an organization that can be on the smaller side, it's good to make sure that it's not just a small group of people that are trying to advocate for these things. And I do a second point I want to throw in there is an element of inclusion that is gaining more and more traction. We've seen it take off a lot within higher education, but it's a part of the workplace conversation, as well as how mental well-being and emotional well-being and holistic health plays a part in inclusion plans, and how mental health can play a really big role in being a truly inclusive environment. That if it is a company or an organization that is not going to be a place where a person can find support, whether that is through time off or hybrid work or flexible work options, to be able to see a therapist or to get counseling through something, they're not going to be able to be their most effective employee self. Just like if a person feels that they're discriminated against or not psychologically safe based on an identity they possess, they're not going to be their best self in being a team member and being a part of the company. And so that's when I always learn there is that if we're not prioritizing mental health, we're also leaving a big piece of inclusion off the table and out of the conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if folks want more information about that, we've got a few podcasts about specific to mental health in inclusion and DEI work. So that is so spot on. This has been fabulous once again to get your incredible insight. And I just have to say, you know, that your deep expertise in this topic I just want to say how much I appreciate that deep expertise, and very much appreciate how your thoughtfulness to this and your thoughtfulness to all of these questions, and just very much appreciate the what you have brought to the discussion. I think we did this in the last, we mentioned this in the last podcast with you as well, but let's just reiterate, because I'm sure there are folks that are going to want to connect with the two of you. Corey, what's the best way for folks to connect with both of you? Is it LinkedIn, a website? What's the best way?
Well, really, where most of our resources are housed are on thegenzhub.com. And that's where you can download, you know, articles and listen to podcasts and access a bunch of information on there that's helpful. We both have contact information on that page too, so you can reach us, and you can also reach us through our social media, but really all of that is housed on that website. So if you're going to remember one thing, it's thegenzhub.com. And that's a great way to reach us either collectively or individually. I'm also on LinkedIn and Twitter, as is our the Gen Z Hub. We have a Twitter handle as well. And I know Megan has her own sites as well, her own social media.
Yeah, so I can be found really easily, whether at my website or on social media. Everything is Megan M. Grace.
That's fabulous. Thank you both. And again, thank you so much for digging in a lot deeper into this topic and for all of your incredible insight. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you. It was a great conversation.
Thank you again for your time today. If you want to join the conversation or learn more, go to deepseaconsulting.com. That is deepseaconsulting.com. And please give us a rating and review on your listening platform of choice. Have a great week.